Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and that's the Orlans. Don't Hang Up, another great hit by them. We're playing them today because this is the birthday of Rosetta Hightower. Born 1944 on this day, she was one of the lead singers in that great group, the Orlans. But we are shifting gears today, reminding you is on this way to this conversation. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ Baltimore's Credit Union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ Baltimore's Credit Union is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, they're a credit union, not just a bank. They belong to you, and money comes back in the end. For more information, www.mecu.com, or you can go to steinershow.org and click on their banner, MeQ, Baltimore's Credit Union. In the paper was this piece about many of us have been following, that Redskins lost in the patent office decision that we'll talk about, their trademark for the name that they use for the Washington football team. And that's caused a lot of controversy. Many people have written saying, well, they may have lost it here, but they won't lose eventually because this is more complex than just that. And the social, political, and other issues surrounding this may not really affect these laws and trademark. And so we're going to wrestle with that, all that together. We are joined once again by Mark Trahan, who is independent print and media journalist. Mark, good to have you back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Suzanne Schoen Harjo joins us once again. Great to have her back. Poet, writer, lecturer, curator, and policy advocate, president of the Morning Star Institute, a national native rights organization who brought a case to the Patent and Trademark Office against the Washington team in 1992. Suzanne, great to have you back.
Thank you so much.
And joining us for the first time here in studio is Julie Hopkins, who's a partner at Tidings and Rosenberg LLP, where she practices intellectual property and technology law, which is one of the reasons she's in the studio today. And Julie, welcome. Good to meet you and good to have you here.
Thank you very much for having me.
And all of you Washington fans and everybody else can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. 410-319-8888. Suzanne, let me begin with you. I mean, this is we've talked about this before on the air numerous times. This lawsuit, in many ways, the suit is similar to the one that you brought against the Washington team in 1992. So talk a bit about, before I ask some very personal questions about this that I want you to relate to our listeners, talk a bit about your original suit and this one and what you think is happening here.
This is the identical suit to the one we brought. And the only thing that's different is the plaintiffs, and their depositions. So ours are out and theirs are in. And the reason that we needed a new suit is that the team escaped through the loophole of latches, and judges get to make up this kind of law, and the district court judge made up the interpretation of latches that it means the time between each of the plaintiffs turning 18 and the time we filed the lawsuit. So we spent 10 years or almost defending the trademark judge's decision in 1999 in the federal courts and trying to overcome that technicality of latches. We did not lose on the merits. We lost on that particular technicality. So in the meantime, when I saw the way it was going, I organized the Young People suit, and which was filed in 2006. And then the U.S. Patent and Trademark Board held that in abeyance pending the outcome of our case, which ended in 2009. So I've thrown a lot of dates around. The basic dates are we filed in 92, we won in 99, and then we lost every place else, and then the Supreme Court declined the opportunity to review it. So that was the end of our case, and the Black Horse case went forward, and that's the case that the TTAB, the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board, has ruled on in the Native Americans' favor. So, yay, that's our second great victory before the TTAB, and this time in a 90, almost 100-page decision with lots and lots of appendices. And they really did their homework, and the trademark lawyers that I know and respect are saying that this is a very tight decision, that they feel like there's no room for for the federal courts to really rule on the side of the Washington team, because they feel that the TTAB closed every door.
So let me turn for a moment, before I turn to Mark Trahan and back to Suzanne, to Julie Hopkins in the studio here. Because, I mean, we will get into this whole issue of the social implications of this and the kind of why this racist name and what that means in our society, and why this battle is taking place, as it does with some other team names as well. But that aside, many people in this world you're in, Julie, kind of question whether this case will actually make it in the end. What are the complexities of issues legally as you see it?
Sure. It's interesting because I've read a lot of commentary that actually goes the other way, that thinks that it will be overturned on appeal. In particular, there was a three-judge panel, and the first time around, all three judges found that the marks were disparaging. This time around, there was one dissenting judge, Judge Bergsman, who felt that the evidence was not substantial enough to support the ruling that the term Redskins was disparaging to a substantial composite of Native Americans at the time that each of the challenged registrations were issued. And so I think that's a concern going forward, that it was not unanimous. So there's definite concerns about the evidence that was used. Also, during the Harjo case, in the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, the judges there did come to a conclusion that the evidence did not support the finding, that there was just not substantial evidence to support the conclusion that was made. I mean, obviously, as we talked about already, they ultimately decided on latches, but there's now two opinions going forward that are criticizing the evidence that was put forth. And as Suzanne mentioned, it is basically an identical record. We're talking about the same evidence that was used in the Harjo case. So
nonetheless, we are talking about two victories, and you're talking about a dissent as if it's equivalent to the board's decision on the side of on the Native American side.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I just think that there is a dissenting opinion, and that's supported by the previous decision by the district court. So I'm not saying that that's going to prevail. I think that there is a strong argument to be made that the evidence does not support the conclusion. So it's going to be interesting. I can't, you know, come to a conclusion at this point, but I think that that's we're really going to be looking. The courts, that the appeals process is really going to be looking to see if the evidence supports that in the given context, you know, specifically whether the term Redskins is disparaging in connection with the use of Redskins in connection with a football team. That's a very specific question, and I think it's going to be interesting to see where it goes.
So this is going to be interesting, because if this does fall, I mean, the way the lawsuit that you brought, Suzanne, then what this does, Mark, is this opens up all kinds of possibilities with names of teams around the country, the Cleveland team professionally, and many other teams around the country.
Well, yeah, I think so, but I think it starts here in Washington. And one of the ways I look at it as a journalist is what's the kind of court of public opinion beyond the legal fight. And I think it's actually game over, and especially when you talk to millennials. The question is more often, why isn't this done already, rather than when will it change? And I think that's just going to continue to grow.
So, Suzanne, I mean, when people look at this case, let me raise one of the issues here that some people were raising, as I read some of the editorials that didn't agree with the decision around this and questioned its legality. Talk about those polls that came out that said that over 90% of Native people in America did not find it offensive. How do you respond to that?
That's one flawed survey.
Right.
That, you know, our scholars have punched holes in right and left, and it's from 2004. Now, the surveys, and there's never been an exact poll, by the way, because how do you know who you're talking to on the other end of the line? You say, are you Native American? The person says yes, and you don't ask anything. <you know.
laughs> Right.
And we're such a small population and such a high population country that it would take a lot of, I mean, statistically, you just can't get at, in a random survey or poll, you can't get at the Native American population like that. Nonetheless, our through our ways of counting, we have all the Native national organizations, the major ones on our side, and no one against us. That and Native nations and leaders, and however you want to slice Native America and Native American society, they're all supporting a name change, and they're calling on and specifically supporting us in these lawsuits. So there's an talk about airtight support that we have that, and it's our voice that matters. It's we're the offended peoples. You don't go to you don't look at the bully in the playground and say, tell me how much the person you're bullying hurts. You go to the person who's being bullied and ask, you know, the nature of the hurt and how much and what should be done. That's the basis for human rights law the world over. You don't go to the offender to determine what the offense is or how the offended feel.
You were going to say what, Julie? I'm sorry.
Oh, yes. No, I agree with what you said. I mean, what's important here is the timing as well as the group of people that you're talking to. And so you're absolutely right. I mean, it comes down to the opinion of Native Americans. It's not the public as a whole. It's not, and it's also not what the public as a whole thinks today. I mean, if we're talking about whether the Redskins mark should be canceled, the real question is, it's at the time that the registration's issued. So we're talking back in the 70s and the 60s and the early 90s. That's the relevant question. So while we have strong public opinion, I think, that people find that the term is disparaging today, that's relevant to whether, you know, Dan Snyder ultimately decides whether he wants to change the name. That's not relevant to whether the trademark should be canceled. So I think there's some distinctions that need to be made there.
Well, those are distinctions that aren't found in real life. Our Native organizations, for example, are clear on the record from the 60s, some of them, NIYC and the National Indian Youth Council, the National Congress of American Indians, the National Indian Education Association, all have called for an end to this and have never changed our minds. We know who we are, we know what we think, and we know how to count. Native leaders would not be in leadership positions if we were going against the mainstream of Native thought.
So here's the question. Two questions here I think are very important. But let me digression first and then come back to what I think are two critical questions here that will be decided around this and how they should be decided and why they will be decided. But I want to take a step backwards a bunch of years, Suzanne, because it's something that I think just is important just for you personally, for people to hear the story of what happened when you first moved to Washington, D.C., and you and your husband decided to go to a Washington football game.
Yes, someone, this was at the end of 1974, and someone gave us tickets to a game. And we're both from Oklahoma and grew up as sports fans. And we hated the name, but we went to the game. We didn't hate the game or hate the players. And so we went to the game, and before it started, people were kind of poking us and asking us questions, and they were, some of them started not pulling our hair so much as kind of pulling it, saying, look, here here's this is Indian hair. This is and they use that word, the R word, with us. And I thought, how bizarre. I mean, I would never go to a public or private place and say, you're a white man. Let me feel your hair. Or start pulling their hair and say, boy, this is really white man hair. I mean, it is a totally bizarre kind of thing. But that is the very definition of objectification. When you objectify people, when you use people as your symbols, as your logos, as your sports team names, as your car names, that's what happens, is that you dehumanize your symbols and they have no meaning as human beings. So that really solidified my long-time feeling that we needed to get rid of these, all of these racist stereotypes, and especially the one in Washington.
So, Mark, and then Julie. So, here's the question to me is: well, let me go to Julie and then Mark, because I want to lay this out on the table here. This part of the discussion. So, why should or shouldn't the idea that a name is a racist name, or objectifying a certain people's who in our country should not be taken into account in these larger questions of what people are allowed or not allowed to use as trademarks?
Well, I think they should. I mean, the law establishes, the Lanham Act has, it's Section 2A, that if a mark is disparaging, it can be denied registration. And so that's the law. And I agree. If a party finds that the mark is disparaging, that they have every right to petition to cancel or to oppose the registration of a trademark. So I completely agree.
So from your perspective, legal, then why would it not fit in this case?
Well, because you have to have evidence to back it up, and so it can't just be that you feel that way and that's sufficient. There has to be evidence at the time of the registration of the marks that the party that's being targeted, that's being disparaged, feels that they were disparaged, that in connection with, in the context of how the mark's being used.
But if there's historical evidence that word was used like the N-word by Americans when referring to Native Americans and wiping them out, why wouldn't that be enough?
I think it would be enough.
Experience is evidence. And it's not that we feel this or we think this or we believe this. This is our experience. These are things that happen to us and how we were damaged, how we were harmed, how we were injured because of those experiences. So those are simply evidence and facts. They're not to be diminished or disparaged by people who are trying to pretend that this is something other than what it is.
Let me ask Mark, you've been listening. I'm sorry you haven't been in here as much as you should have been, but Mark, jump in and give us your thoughts, and we'll turn back to Julie.
Sure.
And Suzanne.
Well, one way this question is being answered is by sports pages across America. The same week of the trademark ruling, the Seattle Times said that's it, and it's going to start pulling it
right
out of copy, the word, out of all the sports page copy. That fits in with a long tradition starting in the 90s with Portland Oregonian, the Salt Lake Tribune. Other newspapers have just said enough with this. We're not going to do it anymore. And so you have that tide going across at the same time, answering that question in very individual ways.
I mean, I know on this program, we've been on the air for 21 years, a little more than 21 years now, and we banned the word from our very first sports show on. So it's not been used in this program in 21 years. But you were about to say what, Julie?
Just that, you know, I think the dissenting opinion, others that have been commenting on this, they make a distinction between thinking that the word is disparaging versus is there evidence to prove it? And it's almost a separate question. So it may be disparaging. If you're telling me you're disparaged by it, then I'm going to believe that you're disparaged by it. But there has to be the right type of evidence to support that finding. And so I don't think that the dissenting judge in the opinion is saying, I don't think it's disparaging. I think he's saying it may be disparaging, but we just don't have the record to support it, and which is a slightly different distinction there.
And his view was not accepted by the majority of the board. We need to say that because you keep acting as if there's equivalence between
I don't mean to do that. I don't mean to do that.
So can we talk about in this debate, I mean, just the legal part of this debate, very quickly in the time we have left, Suzanne, and let you go first. What is the evidence that was presented that said it was disparaging? Just for the larger body of people who say, I don't see anything wrong with that name.
Well, as I said, the experience is evidence, and that the experience of each of the petitioners, of each of the plaintiffs, was factored in there. And to say that they didn't present anything is so insulting. And the board did not, the board opinion did not say that. The board opinion was satisfied. And there were, you know, other kinds of evidence, including records of the National Congress of American Indians and National Indian Education Association. The National Indian Youth Council started against these stereotypes in sports when they formed in 1963. And went after the one in Oklahoma that caught my attention at the University of Oklahoma, Little Red, and at that which was not retired until 1970, and that became the very first one across the country that was retired. So great, and there were about 3,000 at that time of these stereotypes in education and educational and professional sports, and today there are fewer than 900. So we have already won this battle, if you will, on a societal level, because more than two-thirds have been eliminated, and we continue. We're not stopping. One has gotten the most attention, and rightly so, because it's always been said to be the worst one.
So we're running out of time. Final thought, very quickly, Julie, and then and Mark.
Look, I'm
sorry.
Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, I heard that wrong. I just think one of the things to look at is just been the consistency in this argument from Suzanne Harjo. Starting with the original case and now, it's been a very steady, long march. And just looking at the trademark application process, it's been really interesting to watch from afar.
I think that public opinion has a huge role in this, and I think at the end of the day, the decision whether to continue to use the mark is going to come down to public pressure. It's going to come down to financial pressure. You know, if they lose sponsors, if the NFL really puts pressure on them, I think they'll decide to change the name. But at the end of the day, even if they lose after the appeals process, they being the Redskins, if their marks ultimately are canceled, they're still going to be able to use the mark. They still have common law rights. And so the final decision on this, whether their registrations are canceled or not, is really not going to determine whether they can use the mark. And I agree. I think, public opinion is very strong, and I think that's going to really rule the day at the end.
This has been really fascinating. Suzanne Schoen Harjo, once again, thank you for all that you do. Appreciate you coming back on the show with us.
Thank you.
Always pleasure to have you. Mark Trahan, good to have you back with us. Looking forward to having you back again for our roundtables.
Sounds good.
It's always a pleasure to have you with us. And Julia Hoffman, it's great to meet you. Thank you so much for joining us from
Titus. Nice to meet you, too.
Good to have
you.
Thank you. We're going to take a very brief break, and we're going to come right back and celebrate the birthday of Octavia Butler and talk about Afrofuturism and social justice and more. Stay with us.